As you have talked about the next conference, I would like to ask you, which are, in your opinion, the key points to change this financial model and achieve that compromises are really taken into account and they are really effective? It's a question for all of you.
Who wants to address the question? Director General? Okay, we'll take a few questions then. Let me then open the floor. We have, I can see CCTV from China. We are very honored to have as a Chinese television crew coming from China for this event. You have the floor.
Good morning. I'm a journalist from China Central Television. I have a question for Mr. Director General. As you've been advocating and promoting that zero hunger is a critical goal for countries all over the world for the next 15 years, and you've also mentioned that investment is also very important to reach this goal. I'm really interested in your opinion about what role do you think China can play in this, in reaching this goal? And talking about investment, both technically and financially, what areas do you think China should mainly focus on? Thank you.
Thank you. And let me get a third question. The gentleman there at the back, please identify yourself.
Good morning. I'm Maloney from ANSA, an Italian news agency. I wonder if you imagine how to collect this investment, like with a, I don't know, some big event with the donors, or which practical way this goal can be achieved.
Thank you. Let's go now to the podium. We have three questions from ANSA, FN News Agency, and CCTV China. Anybody from the podium who wants to start, much welcome.
Sure. And I'll start with the first question. And the question is, you know, what must be done differently? What must we do as a global community to support the investments as they were outlined? And from a starting point, we need to move beyond ODA as the only answer. That is not to suggest that ODA is not a part of the answer, but it is definitely not the only answer. We must also look for increased investments from developing countries into their own social protection and agricultural development sectors that will ensure the ability to scale up programs at country level. And investments from most developing countries will also require developing or increasing the capacity to raise revenues from taxes and other fees in those countries in support of increased budgets in those countries that will ensure their ability to invest in programming as appropriate. It will also mean private sector investment in agricultural development across the global community. And when we are, and I say across the global community, because as noted in the report, we are not just talking about LDCs, we're also talking about mix and ensuring that we have adequate private sector investments. And we must look to and be willing to take issues and opportunities for innovative financing that will secure additional resources to support the collateral that is required to invest in the programs as described. And as one of the representatives from a government that I will not name that's in this room today said to me, we must move beyond innovative financing as imaginative financing to financing that is real, that does provide a viable tool to support increasing agricultural investment and social protection programs. And I'm sure my colleagues will identify other areas where we must make significant structural changes in how we invest dollars and what dollars are available for investment. The question of China, I'll let him, the Director General, answer since it was posed to him. But once you answer it, I would like to add a bit to that. And I'll stop there and give the floor to my colleagues.
Thank you. I think that nothing has to change and everything has to change. Nothing has to change in the sense that we first need to acknowledge that there has been a lot of progress made and that we need to learn from those successes. There are farmers organizations which are more and more putting their products in the markets, and we need to build on that, enhance it, and scale it up. Now, what has to change? In spite of all the work that many of us have done, productive infrastructure in rural areas is still very deficient. A lot of food is wasted between production and the market, in part because the farmers don't have storage rooms where to store their products, because they don't have enough roads, so the produce gets sour, take coffee. If you take it down through a mountain without roads, by the time the coffee comes to the storage place, it's already acid, so the market is not going to accept it. What has to change? It is true that there have been a number of creative financing models for smallholder farmers, self-help groups in India, small credits in Latin America, but the banking system still doesn't want to take the risk of lending enough and in time to cooperatives so they can put more products in the market, so they can generate more employment, so they can get more income and more resources. So access to resources, stability of assets, and better productive infrastructure have to improve so that the status quo now has to change. I do think that governments have never been as committed as they are in developing countries and in developed countries to support rural development and food security. We see in IFAD's portfolio that for every dollar that gets to the country in the form of loans or grants, countries are contributing almost $2.2 in co-financing. In Latin America, in China, actually, we have a relatively small program financed by IFAD, which is financed three times more by China. We are confident that governments will continue to invest in the rural sectors in the form of co-financing of some projects, but also in making available more resources for social protection and productive activities combined. We believe that China, like many other developing countries in the world, play an immensely important role in reducing hunger and poverty and in boosting rural development. The size of the population of China will represent a dent in terms of positive progress in reducing poverty if you sort of achieve large numbers in poverty reduction in the country. But also as an actor in investing in the rural sector, China plays a very important role in improving infrastructure for development, in supporting small and medium enterprises in many continents, not only in Africa, but also in learning and allowing others to learn from your experiences. So China plays a very important role. I'll leave it there for now.
I will address first the Chinese question. You certainly know that FAO has awarded China for achieving the first millennium goals to halve hunger. And if you look for the numbers, in fact, the Asia numbers came down basically due to the Chinese numbers coming down. And I would say 90% of the number of people that we free from hunger since 1990 comes from China. So China has a port, 300 million people out of poverty. If you look for what China did, in fact, there are two big components. One is social protection, different kinds of social protection. I personally have been in some areas where the Chinese, they are planting trees. So in the mountain areas, they are replanting trees and receive a dollar and a half per day. That's more than enough in that region for survive in a dignity way. But the most important was the urbanization trend. Most of the Chinese that went out of poverty moved from rural areas to urban areas. And that has been the solution of rural poverty around the world. You always, the best, let's say, an easy solution is move people from rural areas to urban areas. There are many reasons where they live better in rural areas, but mostly are the public service that are provided in urban areas and not provided in rural areas, like healthy, social protection, schooling, and many others. What needs to be done is very easy. Try to, Josefina said, 70% of the poor are in rural areas, smallholder farmers. So let's bring them the facilities that we have for urban areas. Education, health, transportation, infrastructure, and so on. So it's not easy, it's costly. You see from the numbers we presented that near 70% of the investment need are in rural areas to achieve this zero hunger. I think also that another very important area to focus on this strategy for zero hunger is, as already said, is smallholder farmers. Family farmers are part of the solution of the hunger problem, and not part of the problem anymore. Providing them opportunity to invest on new technologies, on their own, on healthy, and so on, we can bring these smallholder farmers that are usually subsistence farmers to become active producers for local markets. And China also did that. And this is a very important model to follow in other areas. Let me address the question of how where we will find those investments, where they need to come from. I think that Costas is, blame it, Costas, show it, please. You can find many answers there. We already provide a report on our sofa about it. But let me stress 2 points. The first one is that we need to reallocate national investments if we really needed to tackle hunger and poverty. And I give it a simple example. The African countries that followed the Maputo Declaration to allocate minimum 10% for agriculture and rural development. Most of those countries have achieved the first millennium goals. Those countries that did not reallocate expenditure to focus on rural development and agriculture did not achieve the first millennium goal. So this proves that we need to reallocate national investments more to rural development and agriculture development. This is, I think, an important point. We cannot go on and on bringing everybody to the cities. The cities now are so crowded, don't provide anymore the jobs that we need. So we need to find them in rural areas. And it's important to say that most of the countries that implemented social protection schemes do it with their national budget. They don't rely on international aid to do it because it's very cheap. Brazilian cost is 0.4% of the GDP. And we estimated the global cost would be 0.03% of the GDP. So social protection doesn't cost much. And the benefit it provides returns very soon because it's less expenditure in medicine. It's a kind of, social protection is a kind of a preventive medicine for the poor. Raise their productivity and so on. Second area, there are many countries that will not be able to invest that amount, even if there's only a cell phone per poor. Countries that are very poor countries will need more international help. And I will remind two important sources of funding. One, of course, is the ODA. Recently, I saw an estimate that nowadays the ODA is below 0.3%, 0.3%, what means 1.5 billion only. The commitment of the international, made at the international level many years ago, is 0.7%, what would give us $3.5 billion. We are asking for 260 million. 1,000 times less on what we are talking about, what could be achieved by the ODA if the rich countries really pay what they committed for. So I think that recovering the ODA levels or even increase it is very important. And this is particularly important a message for the moment that we see developed countries in a seven-year financial crisis that will certainly be beyond 7 years. We will not find solution for some problems, like migration, for example, if we still only look inside the developed countries. We need to look more outside developed countries and provide their solution there. So it's cheaper to provide jobs in North Africa than spending the money in the Mediterranean to block the access for them. And there are many other things that we could reorient with that. And let me make a final comment on that. We have seen bans on many things, including ban on food exports. But we never saw a ban on weapons trade, for example. I think that that would be very helpful if we could reorient our production of weapons to produce more food and our social protection schemes on developed countries. I believe that this will bring opportunity to overcome conflicts. Thank you.
Thank you. We are running a little bit out of time, but I'm going to open a few questions for the journalists that are following us live. I understand we have a few African journalists. I'm going to give the floor to Ghana, to the Ghana Business Financial Times, Mr. Conrad Giashi. It's online.
Thank you very much. Good morning, sir. To realize that only 6% of Africa's arable land is irrigated, what avenues can be exploited to harness Africa's rich water bodies to boost agricultural production, especially with climate change in our midst? And the second question is, investments in roads, railroads, and transport systems, storage, and other agro-processing facilities are very critical for Africa's rural poor. How can we channel resources into these areas to assist African governments?
Thank you, Mr. Ghiassi. I'm going to repeat the question because the audio was not very good. The first question is, only 6% of Africa's arable land is irrigated. What avenues exist that can be exploited to harness the continent's rich water resources, especially with climate change? Yes, and the second is on investment in roads and railways and transport system is critical to realizing access to market. What is what your institutions can assist African governments to achieve this? Okay. We have... Shall I collect the two or three questions then? We have another question, but I think we are having problems with the connection with South African Broadcasting. South African Broadcasting, and the question is, what do you mean when you talk about targeted investments in rural development and agriculture? What do you mean when you talk about targeted investments in rural development and agriculture? And the final question we have is in Spanish from a radio in Colombia. They would like an answer in Spanish if possible. And the question is, ¿el estudio que presentan hoy es global? ¿Hay algunas características específicas en el caso de América Latina sobre la cuestión de la inversión que es necesaria para erradicar el hambre? Repito la cuestión de la radio en Colombia. ¿El estudio que presentan hoy es global? ¿Nos pueden decir si hay algunas características específicas en el caso de América Latina sobre la cuestión de la inversión necesaria para erradicar el hambre? With these three questions, I'm going to close the question time for today, and I leave the senior officers in the podium to answer the three questions.
Let me start with some comments about investment in irrigation, which is one of the areas in which certainly many developing countries are looking for further support. I think that everywhere in which the governments are investing in irrigation and is accompanied by technology and access to better seeds and better markets for the smallholder farmers, we have seen important changes. I was in Ethiopia last week, actually, and we are seeing how the government of Ethiopia is expanding and even deciding to invest even more in irrigation, and how that is increasing the productivity of smallholder farmers. But we also saw that it was not sufficient just to build the irrigation canals, that the farmers had to have access to seeds, that they had to have access to fertilizers, and that at the end of the day, they had to find a market that was ready and prepared to buy it. The combination of those factors are making an enormous difference in countries like Ethiopia. We also have programs dedicated to irrigation in other countries where we haven't seen much change, particularly because, as I said, once the farmers have the canals, there are no seeds, there is no technology, there is no electricity, there is no road, and it hasn't proven to be very successful. This is just to say that, yes, irrigation is important, but it has to come accompanied by other factors that really make it successful. I think that in terms of the productive infrastructure and support to SMEs, we are seeing a combination of government programs which are supporting cooperatives and small, the emergence of small and medium enterprises, many of them women, through specific loans and technical assistance. But we are also seeing more and more private sector companies which are finding in smallholder farmers and in local SMEs suppliers which are reliable, suppliers which are sustainable in the sense that they respect contracts and that every day they can deliver more and more. We are seeing now how many more large private sector companies involved in the food industry are going to smallholder farmers as suppliers of the delicious chocolate, for instance, that you have here in Italy. I think I'm going to leave it there for now.
Thank you, Josefina. I understand Ms. Cousin has to leave, so I'm going to give the floor to Ms. Cousin before she leaves.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity. Let me address the China question before I begin the other questions, and I appreciate everything and will support everything that was said by the Director General, but just want to add two other points. One is underlining the point that was made by the Director General of the impact that China's food security improvement has had on not just the Asia food security reduction numbers, food insecurity reduction numbers, but the entire global community food insecurity reduction numbers. And that progress has resulted in significant lessons learned, where there is an opportunity for China to make a difference in the entire global community in addressing the challenges of food insecurity through South-South cooperation. We have not talked about the role of South-South cooperation in providing technical capacity and that as a valuable tool in the addressing the challenges that will allow us to achieve zero hunger. And the second point is a recognition that China has already come to, and that is that bottom quintile, that bottom percent of the population that has not benefited from the economic growth in China is similar to the bottom quintile across the entire global community that continues to suffer from persistent poverty and food insecurity, requiring the types of social protection programs that we have been discussing this morning. And China's recognition and embrace of the Rome-based agencies, as well as their own increasing their own capacity in assisting in investing in the tools that are necessary to support those populations in your country, will address the challenge that will result in a continued reduction in the global number, because it will result in a reduction in the China number. So thank you for that. The question of arable land or the challenge of lack of arable land and the requirement for irrigation, I want to underline or bring to the attention of the media the Dry Lands Coalition that is a product of Qatar and other members of the Middle East community that are working together to invest in tools and financial tools in particular that will support the ability to increase arable land across not only their own countries but across sub-Saharan Africa. And we need these kinds of tools because it is not just enough to design the irrigation schemes that will work, but will also require the financial schemes that will support the ability to scale up those tools that work. And that also leads to the challenge that Josefina noted, which is that any improvements must be full agricultural value chain improvements. We cannot just make improvements in one part of the agricultural value chain. To date, the investments have primarily been downstream. They've been in what are the right seeds and tools that we must use to ensure that farmers have more productive use of their land. We have not address successfully the challenges of access to markets, of access to storage, access to post-harvest production and handling that would result in reduction of post-harvest losses that across parts of sub-Saharan Africa, even today, are between 40% and 60%. And that alone could address many of the financial challenges suffered by many smallholder farmers. And the last piece of that is ensuring that we are addressing the challenges of markets. And when you ask what can we do as the Rome-based agencies, I will just give you one example. WFP is now committed that 10% of everything that we purchase each year will come from smallholder farmers to ensure that we can begin to build the platform for creating durable markets, because that is a key to addressing the challenge of food insecurity. And finally, on the question of when we talk about targeting rural development, it goes back again, and I'm sure the Director General will expound on this, but I would, from a social safety net standpoint in rural communities, really focus on the bottom quintile. So often, agricultural investments are in those who are ready for investment. And when we are providing the tools and the support to those who are ready, we leave behind those who are not. And if we are going to address the challenge of food insecurity, we must address the challenge of that bottom quintile. Thank you very much.
We address the question in Spanish made by Colombia. Okay. I think there is translation. There.
Yeah. Okay. There is translation, and this is the request. If you can switch into Spanish, please.
Primero quiero agradecer la pregunta, pero decirle que de verdad no estaba preparado, así que voy a decir algunas cosas más generales. Pero el documento da la información por regiones, así que después podemos elaborar un poco más esos datos. La gran diferencia de América Latina comparada a las otras regiones es que América Latina ya tiene un sistema de protección social que cubre a estos días 120 millones de personas. Entonces, es más amplio sistema. Incluso en Colombia. Colombia es uno de los países que tiene uno de los mejores sistemas de protección social a las familias pobres. Yo diría que eso hace mucha diferencia, porque permite concentrar la estrategia de erradicar el hambre y la pobreza básicamente en los investimentos, ya que la protección social en la mayoría de los países ya lo tiene cubierto. Eso vale sobre todo para América del Sur. Para Centroamérica todavía no. Todavía en Centroamérica la cobertura de protección social sigue muy pequeña y válida solamente para las zonas urbanas, no rurales. Pero hablando como un todo, la estrategia en América Latina sería básicamente las inversiones para erradicar la pobreza en las zonas rurales. Yo a primera vista sí indicaría tres componentes. Un primero es lo que ya hablamos, la agricultura familiar. América Latina, en toda la región, la agricultura familiar daría un salto extraordinario si apoyada con programas de inversión. Un programa de modernización tecnológica, un programa de extensión rural, un programa de inversiones públicas en carreteras, en almacenaje, etc. Segundo, América Latina es marcada por una profunda desigualdad de acceso a la tierra y el agua. Cualquier estrategia de erradicación de la pobreza extrema en América Latina tiene que tocar eso calcañal de Aquiles de la región. Esa es nuestra marca, la desigualdad de acceso a agua y la tierra. Eso significa programas de remanejo de agua y suelos, financiamientos de esquemas públicos de irrigación y otros que sería. Finalmente, un tercer elemento. América Latina es una de las regiones que ya muestra claramente el impacto del cambio climático. Hay dos zonas hoy día profundamente afectadas y que afectan la agricultura. Una es el corredor seco de Centroamérica, que va desde el sur de México hasta El Salvador, que se multiplican las sequías año tras año. Antes eran a cada 7 años, pasaron a 3 y ahora son todos los años la sequía recurrente en el corredor seco de América Central. Y la otra es la zona andina. La zona andina, como usted sabe, el agua proviene de hielo de los Andes, que abastece toda la costa de países como Perú, como Chile, y el altiplano boliviano también. Bueno, la cantidad de nieve ahora se ha reducido y sobre todo el tiempo de hielo se ha acortado. Lo que antes demoraban 6-7 meses, ahora se hacen 2-3 meses. De manera que no tenemos agua para riego disponible en la mayor parte del tiempo. Hay que hacer inversiones públicas de almacenar agua en la zona andina y hay que invertir claramente en sistemas de riego más eficientes. Aún se utilizan en los Andes los sistemas de riego diseñados por los incas, más de 2.000 años pasados. Hay que introducir el goteo, por ejemplo, que es una tecnología desconocida en esa zona. Quiero finalizar, referirme a las pequeñas islas del Caribe. El Caribe también es una zona cada vez más afectada por huracanes y todos los trastornos del cambio climático. Y eso ha afectado duramente la agricultura. Por ejemplo, con los huracanes hoy día, las enfermedades, tanto animales como vegetales, caminan con una rapidez tremenda, porque un huracán es capaz de, por ejemplo, la cigatoga, que afecta a los bananos, de destruir toda la producción de bananos en todo el Caribe del Este, en un año, ¿no? Entonces, la prevención para y el combate a la enfermedad es también otra inversión pública que se tiene que hacer con urgencia, sobre todo para protección de las pequeñas islas del Caribe. Muchas gracias por la pregunta, Colombia.
Muchas gracias, director general. We are going to close here the press conference unless from the podium anybody wants to add anything. Thanking everybody for their attendance and reminding the media, both here at headquarters and around the world, that we have several communication tools available in our webpage. We have audio, video files, we have the report itself, and thank you everybody here in Rome for attending.